If you do have your Bibles, go ahead and turn to 2 Samuel chapter 5. I think one of the challenges in having a series like this, Sunday evenings or Sunday afternoons, where you're going through a narrative, an Old Testament narrative, sometimes it's just hard to keep up with where you actually are in the story, because we all know a lot of things that happened in David's life. And sometimes you come and you think, wait, did this already happen? Did this not happen? And it's hard to keep up with just where you are in the overall flow of the story. So I'm going to ask you to envision this story, if you will, as kind of a television show. I'll explain what I mean. I realize that's dangerous at 1:45 because most of us, when we think of television shows, we think of, you know, falling asleep on our couch watching them. So don't envision it quite that realistically. All right. But what I would like for you to do is imagine, okay, we've had a whole book, chapters of things going on in David's life. We've had the enemy, if you will, to David, who started out pretty good, Saul, but was twisted. And then we had David and the unlikely hero who is anointed. And then we think, oh, he's going to be king, and then, but he's not king. And we have one thing after the other that happens that foils that process, right? So if you imagine a television show, you're going through a whole season where something bad happens and you think, oh, this is it. They're about to get everything solved. They're about to solve the mystery, whatever it is, depending on which show you're thinking of. And then, no, they don't. So we go on to the next episode, and the next episode, and the next episode. And then you get to the season finale, where at the beginning of the season finale, like, everything starts to turn out good. All the good guys figure out all the problems. They figure out how to beat the bad guys, hopefully. I realize there's some shows that don't do that, but the ones that I like anyway, that's how it works. So they start to figure out everything, it starts to resolve, and then if you keep watching right up until the end of the show, they have some cliffhanger to make you come back and watch next season, right? Alright, at this point, we are kind of at the beginning of the season finale of David's life. You've gone through a whole season of stuff, and we read it thinking, oh, of course, David becomes king at the end. But you go back and add that up, that could have been maybe 14 years, 12 years, depending on where your estimate is of when David was anointed. Many years went by from when David was anointed king, he was told by God, you will rule over Israel, to this chapter, where things start to resolve. We start to see how some of this comes together. And what I would like you to think of today, we're going to look from the viewpoint of really three different people or groups of people and look at God's sovereign faithfulness, because this chapter starts to really show, yes, God was telling the truth. Throughout all of that, God was telling the truth. This is what's going to happen. And there's three different groups of people who have to react to God's sovereign faithfulness in some way. And as we start the chapter, the first group is the tribes of Israel. We'll read 2 Samuel chapter 5, starting in verse 1. Then came all the tribes of Israel to David, unto Hebron, and spake, saying, behold, we are thy bone and thy flesh. Also, in time past, when Saul was king over us, thou wast he that leddest us out and broughtest in Israel. And the Lord said to thee, thou shalt feed my people Israel, and thou shalt be a captain over Israel. So all the elders of Israel came to the king, to Hebron, and King David made a league with them in Hebron before the Lord, and they anointed David king over Israel. So again, a little bit of background. David, several chapters before, went to Hebron, and we're going to find out coming up in this chapter how long he was in Hebron. He reigned there over Judah. It says he reigned there 7 years. So he had been king over a part of Israel, and there had been this civil war. If you were here over the last several times that we've been in 2 Samuel, you've heard some of the events of that, which culminated with David's rival of Saul's house being murdered, Ish-bosheth. And so now you have, there's no real competitor for the throne. So the tribes of Israel come to David, and I find this really interesting. If I'm David, I'm listening to them and thinking, it's about time you got that, right? You think about what they said. They said, look in verse 2. In time past, when Saul was king over us, that was he that led us out and brought in Israel. In other words, you were the one who was leading the army out to all these victories. It wasn't Saul. And if I'm David, I'm thinking, well, yeah, of course. And then he says, at the end of that, the elders of Israel say, that the Lord had said to him, thou shalt feed my people Israel, and thou shalt be a captain over Israel. Think about the audacity, really, to say that. 7 years of civil war. We don't know exactly how many years, but definitely several years before that, of we're following Saul, not following David. And then they come to him and say, you were the one who really led us out, and God told you you were going to be king over us and rule us and be a captain over us anyway. Now, like I said, if I'm David, I'm really confused. Like, why didn't you get this 7 years ago, people? Right? And we don't know exactly how he responded, so we can kind of leave that in our imagination. But regardless, you had people, the elders of Israel, are coming to David, saying things they should have known before. Not only are they saying things they should have known before, they might even be kind of flattering a little. That'd be my guess. You know, they're coming to him and saying, oh, behold, see, we're your people. We're like related, bone of your bone, flesh of your flesh. And you led us out, and you're the one we've seen all this victory under, and God anointed you, and won't you be king over us and not kill us? You know what I mean? They're here probably kind of flattering David to some degree. But they're coming to a king that they should have recognized long before. And they're just doing it now. They see God's sovereign faithfulness coming about. They see all the competitors have been removed. He's the strongest person here. They see that, and they recognize, we should have seen this before. But they come to him and they say, will you be king over us? So they anoint him. That's the first group of people, the elders of the tribes of Israel. And, of course, then we know the background of this. David does become king over them. We're told in verse 4 and 5, this is kind of a summary of David's reign. It said David was 30 years old when he began to reign. That's probably when he began to reign in Hebron. And he reigned 40 years. In Hebron, he reigned over Judah, so part of Israel, for 7 years and 6 months. And in Jerusalem, he reigned 30 and 3 years over all Israel and Judah. Kind of a summary of David's reign. That's where, like I said, this is the beginning of the season finale. And they're telling you, oh, this is how it's going to resolve. David is going to reign. He's going to reign over all of Israel for this amount of time. Now, we're going to skip over a few verses that we'll come back to. And we want to look at David's response to God's sovereign faithfulness. Going down in verse 10. David went on and grew great, and the Lord God of hosts was with him. And Hiram, king of Tyre, sent messengers to David and cedar trees and carpenters and masons, and they built David an house. And David perceived that the Lord had established him king over Israel, and that he had exalted his kingdom for his people Israel's sake. We could go on and read a little bit more of his response, but I want you just to focus on that verse, verse 12. After all that's gone on, after David passed up the opportunities to kill Saul, after David could have taken this into his own hands long ago, after David in the last chapter didn't even reward the person who killed off his competition, because he did not want to take that into his own hands. At this point, he sees God's sovereign faithfulness coming about, and it says David perceived that the Lord had established him king over Israel, and that he had exalted his kingdom for his people Israel's sake. Now my response when something like this happens, and I imagine it's yours, if you've been trusting God for a long time, and in the process of trusting God, you've seen disappointments, you've seen successes that you thought were going to turn out well and then just turned out to be a bigger disappointment. You have trusted God throughout, for me, it doesn't have to be very long. Maybe 3 months, maybe 3 weeks. For David, like I said, at least 7 years plus some, 10, 12 years of this, that he has trusted God. We know from the Psalms, did he trust God perfectly and always just think, oh, it's all great? No, of course not. He struggled. But he did trust in God. Throughout that time, waiting for God's sovereignty to bring about what God had said he would bring about. If it's me, in a much shorter period of time, then when I start to see it happen, I have two responses, really. Either I'm just nervous that this can't be real. You know, something's going to happen, somebody else is going to come up who's going to attack the kingdom, and God really probably hasn't actually fulfilled this. I might think, well, God will one day. He'll reward everything in heaven, yes. But right now, the good that I see, I'd be nervous. And that may be what David was feeling, because you notice in verse 12, it doesn't say initially that he perceived the Lord had established him. It says that at this point, after some other things have happened, Israel has come to him, they've anointed him, Hiram, a king from another nation, has come and helped to establish that kingdom. So he said that he perceived God had established him. Maybe he had been nervous. Maybe at this point he says, okay, this is real. God has actually brought about what he said he would. But I said I had two responses. My other response, probably more often my response, is something more like, finally, it's about time God got around to that. It's a finally feeling. It's a relief, but it's an impatient, a selfish feeling. And I want you to notice that the text points out to us that that's not what David was thinking. Because in verse 12, the last half, it says that he, God, had exalted his kingdom for his people Israel's sake. David's recognizing this isn't just for me so I can enjoy my nice palace built out of cedar so that I can finally have rest instead of running around the wilderness with Saul chasing me. David says, I've been exalted as king for God's people, Israel's sake. For him, it was a relief, a finally moment, like, yes, I've been waiting for this. But it wasn't an impatient and self-seeking finally moment. It was, wow, look at God's sovereignty. God has brought this to pass. I trusted in it, and it has happened. And I can imagine maybe David, at this point, is bubbling up with some of the things we hear in the Psalms, like, oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. That's David's response to God's sovereign faithfulness. And then the last group, which really it's presented in two groups here, would be God's enemies. And, of course, you might imagine, doesn't turn out as well for them. So the first group, in verse 6 through 8, which there's some stuff here that's a little bit challenging, certainly. So if you read it and you think, well, that's interesting, go study some more because we don't have time to do it right now. But if you look it up, there's really some interesting stuff here. This is the account of David taking Jerusalem, which would, of course, become his capital, as we know. And in this account, there's this idea of the blind and the lame. I'll read the verses, starting verse 6. The king and his men went to Jerusalem, unto the Jebusites, the inhabitants of the land, which spake unto David, saying, except thou take away the blind and the lame, thou shalt not come in hither, thinking, David cannot come in hither. Nevertheless, David took the stronghold of Zion, the same is the city of David. And David said on that day, whosoever getteth up to the gutter and smiteth the Jebusites, and the lame and the blind that are hated of David's soul, he shall be chief and captain. Wherefore they said, the blind and the lame shall not come into the house. Now, like I said, there's some issues there. There's some phrases that are difficult to translate. There's some stuff that I won't get into all the details, but I will tell you what I think is probably the best explanation. You can study from there, and if you think I'm wrong, you can email me or something, because we won't be here for you to tell us at some point. So, whatever. But I think the best explanation here is you have people who obviously have a confidence in their fortress. We can see that from the end of verse 6, because they think David can't come in here. So the Jebusites, who, by the way, interestingly enough, should have been driven out a long time ago, because God had commanded the Israelites to clear that land when they came in with Joshua. Right? So they shouldn't have even been there. But they're there, and they think, we have this fortress that David can't touch this. So I believe probably what's going on is they're taunting David, and they're saying, we could put blind and lame people up here to defend this city, and you still couldn't get in. And I don't know, maybe they did. It's possible. Maybe they put, a cripple up on the wall to mock David's men. They said, you can't get in here. And so it says, nevertheless, David did take it. And then David's statement, he said, whoever goes up smites the Jebusite, and the lame and the blind that are hated of David's soul, he shall be chief and captain. So he takes it and uses it as motivation and says, all right, this army that he has now, which probably was a pretty impressive army at that point from all the tribes of Israel, he says, all right, whoever goes up and takes out those people who are taunting us, that person will be chief and captain. And we know the rest of the story. They did take it. David fortified the city. So now instead of there being a fortress that they thought was impenetrable, David took it over and it becomes his fortress. All right. Think about what that says about God's sovereign faithfulness. In bringing David about, he brought him to a place of safety. In Jerusalem, he brought him to a place where David, having responded correctly, trusting God, following God, David brings God's people to obey God more fully, because now they're actually doing what they should have done under Joshua. God, in the process of exalting his king, is also taking the proud person who says, you can't touch me here, And he's saying, oh, yes, I can. God's sovereign faithfulness is something that the Jebusites had to react to. And how did they react? By shaking their fist, which never works well against God. And then towards the end of the chapter, we'll see another group of enemies. So we've seen the tribes of Israel who should have known better first, but finally come around to it. And then maybe with a little bit of bad motives, possibly, maybe kind of flattering. And we see David, who has his moment of finally, but he's not impatient and selfish with that. He is looking to do good for God's people. And then we have the enemies, the Jebusites were destroyed. We have the Philistines. Two different occasions. The Philistines, in verse 17, it says, they heard that they had anointed David, king over Israel. So all the Philistines came up to seek David, and David heard of it and went down to the hold. The Philistines also came and spread themselves in the valley of Rephaim. So put yourself in the Philistines' mindset. I'm sure they probably remember David as the one who had led Israel's armies quite successfully for a while under Saul. Right? Maybe, I don't know, did they call it the story of Goliath and David instead of the story of David and Goliath? I don't know if maybe they would have reversed that in their mind, but they might remember, this is the guy who took out our big champion, and now all of Israel has anointed him as king. Now, if you're the Philistines, you're thinking, this is a bad thing. So that's why they come up. They bring their armies up, they say, all right, well, we're going to try and snuff that out. Israel's been in a civil war for a while, so we could leave them alone. But now, we need to go take care of this problem. So they come up, and David goes to God. Of course, what should be his response says, shall I go up to the Philistines? Wilt thou deliver them into mine hand? And the Lord said unto David, go up, for I will doubtless deliver the Philistines into thine hand. And David came to Baal Perazim, and David smote them there upon mine, and said, the Lord hath broken forth upon mine enemies before me as the breach of waters. So David goes up at God's command, defeats God's enemies. And it turns out the Philistines hadn't had enough, so they come back and they get beaten again. And you see, God's enemies, when God's sovereign faithfulness is shown, God's enemies are defeated. It's just the way it works. They don't have a chance. They come with all of their armies. God tells David in the second story here, I won't read for time's sake, but in the second story, he gives him a specific strategy. God tells him, this is exactly how you will defeat the Philistines. And David follows, and they're gone. Because God's enemies aren't just fighting God, they aren't just fighting David and Israel, they're fighting God. And God gives them that strategy. And it's interesting too, one other verse I want you to look at here, verse 21, says, and there they, the Philistines, left their images or their idols, and David and his men burned them. So not only was this a physical battle which resulted in the army being beaten, but it was a clear sign to Philistines, to Israelites, that those gods cannot do what the true, living, sovereignly faithful God does. And the author makes a point to say that. You know, he could have left that out. He could have just said, yeah, the Philistines were defeated. But he doesn't. He says their images were burned too. Because this was not just the Philistine army that was destroyed, but in the face of God's sovereign faithfulness, the Philistine gods were seen as nothing. So that was their response. They shook their fist, and God defeated them. We looked at three people, or categories, of people. And I want you to think about, in your life, when you run into God's sovereign faithfulness, where are you? We're probably all of these at times. But think about, are there times when, really, God's sovereign faithfulness is causing something to happen and you want to shake your fist at it. You want to say, no, God, not that. I'm going to make something else happen. We at least want to do that. We probably aren't usually bold enough to say it, but we at least want to. But at the end of the day, those people are destroyed. The idols that they built for themselves have no power to stand before God's sovereign faithfulness, to keep His promise, to establish His kingdom. Sometimes we're like David, and we've been trusting God, not perfectly, but we've been trusting Him to be faithful. Sometimes for years and years and years. And we can come like David and not be just nervous. Maybe something bad's going to happen and this isn't really it. Not be, finally, but impatient. We can come like David and say, God, your faithfulness is shown. This is awesome. And you've done it so that I can help others. That's great. Sometimes we're like David. But I think more often than not, as believers here, we're really like the tribes of Israel, coming to a king that we should have acknowledged very, very long time ago. We're coming to a king, and not only are we coming, but we want to build ourselves up a little and say, we kind of deserve this. And we really recognize, and we're not coming to David, certainly, but we're coming to God's perfect king. We really recognize, Jesus, that you should have been king in my heart long ago over this area. I really recognize that. We really recognize that you're going to rule forever. We often do that, don't we? We come to a king we should have recognized long ago, and yet we still want to, see, we're kind of worthy. Come rule us. We want to flatter him. But just like David, the imperfect picture of Christ here, God's king, he doesn't mock those people and tell them, you know, I'm good with the group I have. We're not told of any punishments he deals out. Instead, like in verse 12, when David said he had exalted his kingdom for his people Israel's sake, instead, this king that we come to, who we should have acknowledged a long time ago, is a king that recognizes that, yes, he's king over the entire universe, and every knee will bow. And yet, you and I, coming to him imperfectly, sometimes flattering, he looks at us and says, yes, I'm king, but I'm king partly to love them. I'm king to do good for God's people, to help lead them into obedience, like David did, to taking over Jerusalem, to fighting the Philistines, to help bring them into peace, like David would, for a time. But Jesus will one day for forever. And that is the king that we come to. Like I said, I think probably we're sometimes in all of these categories, because we all face God's sovereign faithfulness in our lives. But I would much rather be like the Israelites, coming to the right king saying, I should have known it a long time ago, but you're my king, than be like God's enemies. We all face God's sovereign faithfulness. But what is your response to it? Do you come submitted to it? Do you come fighting it? Do you come trusting in it? Do you come trying to accomplish things in your own way? I'm thankful that when we come, whether we come really fully correctly or not, I'm thankful that we do come to a king who is exalted to do his people good. Let's pray. Father, I do thank you for your word. Thank you for the account of David that we have spread out across many chapters, multiple books, and your word that we can see some of his weaknesses, that we can see some of his strengths. But most of all, God, that we can see that you are a sovereign God who is faithful, who keeps your promises to your people. And Lord, as we